precision flying.
For 1,000 years, a race of alien machines has been bent on destruction of the human race.
They hate us with every fiber of their existence.
And now their evil plans may become reality.
It's dangerous around here.
Why does people want to hurt us? What did we do to them?
It's not what we did to them. It's what they fear we could do.
Join the last remnants of the human race in their quest for a new world.
13th colony. This other world. Where is it? What is it called?
Earth.
And be there for the ultimate confrontation.
Enemy closing. 30 microns.
But if you're wrong...
25 microns.
I'm not wrong.
15 microns.
Cylons lured me into their deception once.
Closing in. 5 microns.
Never again.
Battlestar Galactica.
Are here. I'm your host Sully, back with Tom and JJ, not Abrams.
There are those who believe that life out here began out there.
With okay. Tribes of humans that some say are the forefathers of the Egyptians or the Toltecs or the Mayans. There are some who still believe that there are tribes of man out there looking for home. Cue the music.
Not John Williams plays.
Yes, and we do take requests.
I remember Battlestar Galactica. To me, Battlestar Galactica was an hour version of Star Wars, but it wasn't Star Wars.
Well, and the critics were just merciless. They were just going out, you know, accusing this and Buck Rogers as just garbage. And it's just like, they came before. They're just being created now that Star Wars has opened up the door and realizing exactly. You can do this. And I prefer Buck Rogers, but this first season that we're going to get into, like, you can't deny the epicness of it. And much like Buck, you know, Glenn A. Larson proposed to Universal, hey, you know, you gotta release the first 3 episodes, edit them together in a movie, and that's like free advertising for the fall when we release this show. And I really wish shows would do that now. How kick-ass would it be? Even if it went downhill, you wouldn't forget how bad. If there's a kick-ass pilot, oh man.
Yeah.
Theaters would sell out of anything if they really are looking forward to it.
Well, it did come out in the theaters, I think. I think it did.
Yeah, and then, it did. And the episodes themselves, like Buck, you know, they would chop them up for syndication. But
yeah.
But yeah. And
the thing was that when it came out on TV, they did a little bit of like, kind of like switching some stuff around. Because what I remember is that and what I've read is that Baltar died in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He was killed, murdered. And then when they did the TV show, they basically had it where Baltar was spared for his treachery, and the was the Imperious leader was like, okay, I'm going to sue them for peace, but I want you to go out and, you know, do what you need to do and, you know, go try to find, you know, And, you know, there's
to
a lot
think
of...
like the human. Yeah. To be the human.
Woman.
Yeah, but I'm with you. It is an... It's a very subtle retcon compared to today. If you did that, like, people would be just bitching on Twitter because people are now more astute. They can notice big key changes.
You know,
and kind of like how, I mean, it is so funny how both this and the A-Team, which both starred Dirk Benedict, were both plagued by casting problems. You know, he almost didn't get a different actor plays Face Man as well as one of the female leads in the pilot. And they're like, we ain't putting up with that actor's. The producer, Stephen J. Cannell, who also produced this, you know, he wants these guys who he originally proposed to the network. And the network's like, sure, finally, that you can have it now that it's very clear that we're wrong, but we can't admit we're wrong. And same kind of deal here is just like fighting, getting John Dystra fresh off of making the award-winning effects for the original Star Wars and getting fired at the same time.
This is what gets me. I read Lucas wanted to sue Dykstra because Dykstra and a bunch of guys did not want to go up to where Skywalker, you know, where Skywalker ILM would be. He wanted to stay in the valley. And then Lucas and then Fox, you know, this is the thing we should just basically clear up. Fox sued Universal.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Right.
Then Universal sued back Fox.
They clapped back.
Yeah. Oh God, it's so weird to read it because they said, well, Fox basically took, the Buck Rogers, you know, serials and the Flash Gordon serials and the ideas for Silent Running from. So it was like okay, so you did this, but we did this, and you did, and it was a lot of finger pointing. Yeah. But not only that, Lucas went after Mattel.
Oh, for God. The toys.
Yeah, and just like Gene Roddenberry basically owned all the rights to the theme song, making Alexander Courage a poor man. George had his share, you know, and I say this as a fan. I love the man. I think he's unfairly bitch slapped by the internet, but at the same time, when he gets arrogant, much like Universal and Fox won't admit to anything, he's the same way. He will do the whole, you wronged me. And I think this is just a theory of mine. But just having seen all the numerous, you know, documentaries over the years, especially the excellent Industrial Light and Magic, which gets even more detail with how they did the process. No more reusing the same overdone, you know, documentaries. Like, they got really detailed, allowed Phil Tippett to show his side of the story and Dennis Muren, a more recent interviews. But yeah, when they went to Dystra, you know, he's put it behind him and George has too. But I feel like George decided he had to be an asshole to everybody. Because his wife, Mary, had broken his heart, just flat out saying, you know, I saved your movie, but I don't believe in your vision or you. Marcia. And that hurt him. Yeah, Marcia Lucas. She was hanging out with his buddy Scorsese and helping out Spielberg. And he was just like, get the fuck out of my house. I don't want anything to do with you. We're getting divorced. And yeah. I own my damn property and merchandise as well as my kids. Bye. You know, it's just, it was one of the, I think he just decided, you know, and I mean, he got this when he did the prequels as well. I think he really did get to where he's just like, if you got nothing that I want to hear, I do not want to talk to you. And I'm tired of it just being Steven encouraging me. I need you to hear me out. And if you're clearly just going to tell me I have a shitty idea, then I think that's the other problem too. We're already blunt as we are now, but I think we were even more blunt back in the 70s. No one was keen on encouragement or saying, how about we fine-tune it a bit? You know, like even Brian De Palma was a hard ass on him before he finally offered, you know what, just give me five, you know, whatever residuals, just for uncredited rewrites of the intro so it makes better sense. But he's a little snobby too, because both he and Coppola is like, they kind of consider themselves superior to Lucas, but they kept going back to him for a favor. So it's just like they all have these very complex friendships that I wouldn't even call friendships nowadays. They're just colleagues who work together, but yeah, same kind of deal here. We're seeing Larson take off. Donald P. Belisario is getting his start here before he becomes the mega TV producer. We are seeing so many. Stu Phillips. Great score. I'm so glad La La Land Records finally released that album, because that is a damn fine score.
Yeah.
It's like the Superman theme, and yeah, they kind of add different kind of elements to, even though they're kind of going more to classic orchestra, it somehow works for the darker, suspenseful moments.
Oh yeah, yeah, mm-hmm.
And especially the inevitable when they're revealing the Cylon creator himself, and they're just like, and by the way, it was a fucking alien race, you know.
Yeah. Wait, who created the Cylons? I keep forgetting. It was
Belscar. They spell his name different in the 2004 remake, but and yeah, they change it up to where he's having hallucinations and
yeah,
more complex. But here they are more blunt. He is practically Skeletor, Cobra Commander. He is, do not come near my castle. You will be shot on sight.
You know? Yeah. I remember they showed the Cylon planet actually in one episode, and it was it's like they were lizards or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the things that
I don't think they'll ever admit to it, but I felt like Space Above and Beyond, a criminally canceled show by the X-Files guys, really tried for some of the same stuff. What if they're all in robotic suits and they have green blood inside of them when they die, you know, and
yeah,
if you actually tear off the suit, you can see them. And Boom and Dynamite Comics, I love what they've done lately. They still not only have helped there be a season 3 through 5 of the original Battlestar, including a redone Galactica 1980, you know, the proper way it should have been done. Like, they took all the scripts they wanted to do before they got canceled and reworked the whole concept, and fans responded way better to it, those who read comics. And but they've even done creative stuff where they have kind of a Star Trek Twilight Zone mirror universe where both eras of Battlestar are having to fight each other in a twisted way, and it's like Starbuck versus Starbuck. It's pretty awesome. And this is kind of the biggest still. I have nothing wrong with Dirk Benedict as an actor. I know he's kind of a asshole behind the scenes, but he really does a solid job here. He's just downright handsome and just likable as Starbuck here. And
yeah,
there's several times where when he poses the legendary pose with the gun, you almost feel like Josh Whedon or someone stole that for Firefly for the Malcolm Reynolds character. You're like, yeah, you totally took that pose.
I think the thing that gets me is, like, you had, first off, the cast was amazing because you had,
especially the original Adama. Like, who's worked with Lauren Green has said that he is literally everybody's granddad. Like, if you want to ask him something, he'll give you some solid advice that
he was coming off Bonanza.
Yeah, totally different show.
No, actually, almost the same. You know, here he was playing Ben Hart, the father to three kids.
I just mean just as a Western, like
as a Western.
But yes, his character is similar. Yes, in that he's kind of the granddad to everybody. I just mean having to end it with a shootout or a family drama as opposed to sci-fi intrigue. But
well, that's the thing. Go ahead,
JJ.
And you're getting Richard Hatch right off the streets of San Francisco. You got Dirk Benedict. You've got John Colclus, who done a whole bunch of TV movies. He was drafted by Baltar. You had, in the original, it's Lou Ayres as the president of the Council of 12.
Yep.
Yes.
And you have Ray Milland as Yuri, the greedy guy.
That dude. Then
you had what's her face playing Rick Springfield was in it. Dirk Benedict, I think I just mentioned, was coming off of a whole bunch of movies and TV shows. Mm-hmm. Then you had who the hell who played
Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour, who just done a Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think who the hell else was on that show where it was like, I remember like seeing like Marta Jensen.
I mean,
the one who
played
Mary Jensen. Yeah. She played, she was a model. And then they had the blonde woman who played
Cassiopeia.
Cassiopeia.
That's Rhett Spang. And she was also in an episode of ISIS.
And she was in
an episode of ISIS. Wait,
yeah,
yes.
It was called ISIS years before ISIS.
And she was in Happy Days. If you watch the episode The California Kid, she's in that episode. I think it was right before Galactica. She's like one of the main characters on those episodes. That's the one where Fonz jumps the shark.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Figuratively and literally.
Yes.
I think they actually show part of that on Henry Winkler's recent Inside the Actor Studio episode too.
Yeah, he was like, oh, I'm well. I love the fact that I'm known for something like that. You know,
1000%. And your favorite dude from Lost in Space, Jonathan Harris,
played the voice of Lucifer. You had Terry Carter, who had just done McCloud as Colonel Teague.
I know played by James Patrick Stewart, who has had a very giant voiceover career.
No, kid, what, the little kid? That was Noah Hathaway.
Yep.
Okay, so.
He was also in Neverending Story.
Yeah.
Okay, I know about that. So which one was Stewart? Was he on the awful second season? Let's see.
He's on Galactica 80.
Okay, my bad. He's Dr. Z. Wow, he's such an idiot.
And And here's a trivia question. Who played the original Dr. Z?
Robbie Riss, wasn't it?
Yep.
There you
Robbie Riss did it in the pilot episode.
Okay, shit. So there was that, and then Barry Van Dyke was in the second season, but there was plenty of other guys. Ford
was in second season. Robin Douglas was in second season.
The Allstate guy, Dennis Haysbert, was even the voice of the Cylon leader in the initial episodes.
They brought Patrick McNee on to be the leader, and they had Jonathan Harris playing Lucifer, who was the robot. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching, I'm like, Jesus Christ, all those years in Lost in Space, and he's playing a friggin' robot.
Right, a robot dog. It's not even a real dog.
No, it was just Lucifer was like this giant, like crystal headed.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Okay. So
you're thinking of a Muppet.
So who voiced
Muppet? Was the Robo Daggett.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay. Yeah. No, those guys were amazing too. But Herbert Jefferson Jr.
Yep.
He was the original. I can't remember if he was the original Boomer or the other second in
command. He's the original Boomer.
He's the original Boomer. Yeah.
And those listening, we don't mean the Boomer slur. We mean the character Boomer, which later became a Eurasian gal in the rehab, but I mean they're two different entities. I see every once in a while people want to tear either one around, and it's just like they can both be enjoyed. Different reasons. The redone one is more of a Blade Runner, Terminator, Star Trek, you know, montage. A little bit of Aliens, because they literally reuse so much dialogue from that classic to characterize all the Marines. But here, this is its own kind of epic, and it's what you had prior to the 80s version of Flash Gordon. And I do love how these producers were still just besides themselves. They don't know why it got canceled. It had more ratings than, you know, it was airing on ABC. NBC had Buck Rogers, and it was
they kind of stilted it. Because when it got canceled, Larson was like, all right, I'll do Buck Rogers. And Buck Rogers came out and he was like, hey, I got a hit here. And then, and that kind of tanked after the second season.
Yeah.
But Galactica was like, and you got to realize Galactica itself was kind of like had some quasi-religious things attached.
The thing is that Glenn, I think I read somewhere or heard somewhere that Glenn Larson made it specifically so they would match up with the Mormon trek across the country.
Yes, that's what they wanted. That's what he wanted, because he was raised a Mormon himself. And remember, there's a Council of 12. There's a council in the Mormon religion. The idea of lost tribes, they that's from the, you know, the Bible, the book of, you know,
I believe the, it. My uncle and aunt are Mormons, so I totally believe it.
you know, the ideas of, you know, using, you know, Greek, Egyptian, Roman, gods, idea of the devil himself, you know, Count Iblis. Remember that episode?
Oh, that was good. For those who don't know, this is now streaming on Tubi.
What?
The original Battlestar.
Yeah. Including Galactica 1980 episodes.
Right. It's listed under season two. I will just say this about 1980, since I know we all hate it with a fire-breathing passion. It's mercifully short, and the last two episodes are like the only worthwhile episodes. The rest are just them being Earth cops with stupid helmets, and you're wondering what's going on, and did I switch the channel to the wrong show? Is this Adam 12? What is this?
Yeah, the best way to kill a Cylon is put him by a microwave.
Or have him hang out with Wolfman Jack.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, the Cylon's at the party, and like they hit the microwave, and also the microwave fries the Cylon, and you're like, fuck, we could have gotten like 100 microwaves flown by that would have son of a bitch, you know.
Yeah, it's like they review all this stuff that the way it's inserted just raises more questions instead of closing it all out. And it's just like, guys, you either let it out too soon or you didn't let it out fast enough.
Yeah.
I feel like the guy screaming in Monty Python and the Holy Grail going, get on with it.
Well, get on with it.
Get on with it.
Get on with it. And then we got to do the whole thing together. One, two, three.
Get on with it.
The thing was, the night it premiered on television in 78, it was probably halfway through, and then news broke that there was going to be the peace accords between Israel and Egypt.
I saw that.
Yeah.
But you know, Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin. So that kind of like, you know, was like, you know, and people had to wonder what the hell was going to go on after that. You know,
we think office politics are ridiculous nowadays, but throughout the 70s and early 2000s, you will see so many stupid reasons for how various vice presidents of programming would use any excuse to remove somebody when they couldn't use the ratings excuse. And it, like, the way they politicize this show is ridiculous. Like, to even get any allusions to real life, you really have to stretch it. Like, they're there, but they're not blunt. You know, it's a big ass difference between, oh, a plane just crashed and we just saw a movie that had a plane crash in this city. It's too much for us. But here they're just like, oh, well, and I saw there was one critic here who hated it and used allusions of current political happenings at the time. And it's just like, no, that's not at all what this show is about. No. I get that you hate it.
No, yeah, it's not. It's a space Western.
It's a total Western, but it's also just a simple epic every week. It almost, unlike most shows, it doesn't, you know. Again, like you've said before, Buck kind of went more Star Trek. This kind of goes, again, more Star Wars. There's an opening firefight and closing battle, but in between is all suspense and political peace talk, but not of the kind where, again, you would totally mistake that for UN type shit. It's like, no.
Yeah.
How long was the UN around? I don't think it was formed until much later.
1948, so it's almost 30.
So it was here already, but it, it still was a long way from what the current UN is.
No, it was 45
after World War II. Yeah. But then, even then, like, to mistake this for current happenings, like, that's, you really, really, really got to be desperate to just hate something.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the thing was this, and I've always said, is like, every TV critic back then who saw this, you know, I think there were a couple that gave it favorable reviews.
But very, very mild, like not.
But very mild, yeah. But, you know, everybody says it jumped on the coattails of Star Wars. Look, everybody jumped on the coattails of Star Wars. Some were good, some were bad. And this is universal. This is the the people that did Flash Gordon back in the 1930s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, you know, Universal. And, you know, the thing was that, you know, look what happened after Star Wars came out. Paramount did Star Trek. You know, Disney did the Black Hole. You know, Universal was putting out this. So this was, but this was like, hey, we can watch Star Wars weekly on TV. No one thought of that back then, you know. And the thing was
nowadays it's a no-brainer. You know?
Yeah.
If there's a hit Western now or a hit dark fantasy or horror movie and people are told, hey, there's a spinoff of that, but it's going to be a miniseries. I mean, there's already a Blade Runner show being announced. That sounds pretty dope. But there's plenty of other ones. Like, they're thinking of doing, for instance, a Friday the 13th prequel. And it's just like, no. We already know everything, so why would you do that?
Why do you want to know what happened?
About Mr. You know, Mr. Jason?
The thing I've said about Battlestar Galactica 2 was that it has some really good guest stars.
Yes.
They brought in Fred Astaire for an episode. Brent Summers. They brought in Lloyd Bridges playing
he stole every scene he was in as the other general guy who's disagreeing with the Dama on principles,
and that's why we have to hit the fuel bay in Dakomori.
I mean, to go from Sea Hunt to this freaking show, that's fucking awesome. This was a decade before he went and was in every Zucker Brothers, you know, parody movie.
Well, what, Airplane came out in 79, 80?
Okay, my bad. So 2 years.
1980.
Okay.
1980. So, right, but I think what they did with his character was it was supposed to be like he was supposed to be like George C. Scott and Patton.
You know, they couldn't afford George C. Scott. He was a movie actor.
No. I'm not. I don't mean George C. Scott. I mean like George S. Patton and MacArthur. And Adama's supposed to be like Eisenhower or Omar Bradley. You know,
you definitely get an Eisenhower from him, but he's way more softer than Eisenhower as opposed to I want a big giant crackdown. You know,
no, but I mean that's the thing. That's the thing that's like great. It's like you got these two actors that have been in the movies for a long time,
right?
And they're playing these two opposites. And the great thing about that episode was that I can remember watching it and thinking to myself, all right, if there was another Battlestar, there's got to be other Battlestars out there. And there's been fan fiction where they've written about, you know, there was a, you know, Kane survived what happened. And, you know, they've made a fleet of Battlestars to go after the Cylons now. And, you know,
right.
It was just, you know, they found the other tribes and stuff like
that. The lost fleets who needed help, but never found. But that's, like, how I like how it does kind of briefly become lost in space for those moments. Is like we want to find what's out there instead of World War show, you know, in the future. You know,
how ironic Anne Lockhart was on this show as Sheba, and her mother her mother was on Lost in Space.
Yeah,
and I gotta say one thing. Who had a crush on the girl who would always announce on the bridge when the fighter pilots were just like, fighter,
you know, oh,
fighter,
yeah, right?
She was oh, cute.
She was so cute. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
I'd tie her up there with Erin. I would tie her with Erin Gray on Buck because it's the same kind of deal where you are just like, I believe everything you have to say and much more.
She's as cute as a button girl with like this pretzel hair bun stuff. And you're just like, oh my God, I would be like, you know, dating her if I had the chance, you know. But that's another story, you know. But I'm going to say this though. They took the character of Cassiopeia in a totally different direction.
Very unexpected.
Because remember, when she started, she was essentially a prostitute.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's totally they it's wild how they're even able to get past the TV censors at that point.
Yeah.
They're flat out implying she's a madam.
And then they change it around where she's a medical assist, like a medical nurse or something like that.
And some parent must have complained or said, this is a little risque for my kid. So I'm sure they got some fan mail that wasn't too polite. And they said, okay, chill. We'll reword it.
I remember they got Brett Summers to be in. I said, Brett Summers. There's a guy in there who was in Elvis movies.
Wow, I think so.
And he's a blonde-haired guy. I'm trying to remember his name.
That makes sense, though, because Universal distributed along with Sony a bunch of Elvis movies. So
yeah, and I'm trying to remember his name, and I can't remember it. But he was in a whole bunch of like these old, you know, these Elvis movies. He hung out with Elvis too, and you know, he plays two characters in the show. One, he plays an alien. The other, he plays like a cowboy gangster kind of guy.
In okay. one, of,
I'm trying to remember his name. Shit. And they had.
Is it Lance LeGault, who was also a stunt double?
Yeah,
for Lance
LeGault, yeah, that's who it was.
Yeah, that dude is awesome. I'm looking at him now, and I have totally seen him on Rockford Files, MacGyver, Star Trek, and
I remember.
Oh, he's in a hysterical even episode of both Magnum PI and TJ Hooker because the latter is always funny.
The thing I loved about it was like, it was also, you know, it was good, it was fun, you know, you got to see a lot of stuff, but you know, there's certain episodes I really love. You know, I could tell you off the bat, Saga of a Star World,
mm-hmm.
it's great, mm-hmm. and the thing in that episode when they meet the Ovians,
mm-hmm.
yes,
the bugs, and they go down, and Cassiopeia goes down to the chamber. And sees the bug eating the flesh off of it's like a larvae eating the flesh off of something, and it puts its head up. That creeped me out.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, and that was as much as you could do back then, you know, because they would do 70s TV movies, but they were often movie of the weeks or anthology shows. And yeah, there are moments where it's like they can get a little creepy, like Kolchak level, but not to where they scare everyone and make them turn off the TV. So I'm realizing now LeGault was also Colonel Decker on the A-Team. Mm-hmm. So there you go. He's part of the Elisario Larsen crew also, but that's awesome. I didn't realize he was Elvis's pal and stand-in.
They did a couple episodes that were kind of like, I'm trying to think, like takeoffs on old movies. Like they did one called "The Ice Gun," the gun on Ice Planet Zero.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
basically, Conquest or something. The Final Battle, something like that.
Yeah. It was.
Seems like three other movies they did that were like editing the show episodes together. Just any of the recurring ones that they could syndicate easier.
What happens is that they go into space. There's this gun that shoots off, and it's you know, they're trying to destroy it, mm-hmm. and it's on an ice. What happened was that they send down Apollo, Starbuck, and Boomer, and a bunch of cutthroat demolitions and experts, and they meet Ed Herlihy, who was the guy who was who played the alien in The Last Starfighter.
Yes, he did.
Yes. Okay.
I'm pretty sure that the more we think about that, I'm pretty sure that's why he got the job. They're like, you were great on TV. You are who we need for this independent sci-fi picture.
Yeah. And they had Britt Eklund in mm-hmm. the episode playing the clone girl. They did a lot of trick shots too. And that
they really
was,
do.
So that's the second Bond girl we have on a, you know, on TV.
Yes.
Oh, and man.
Good stuff.
They did one like The Magnificent Warriors, which is like The Magnificent Seven. They did
that. I will give them that. It definitely does feel like a Western on those episodes, the planet only episodes.
But the thing about that episode is that, Brett Summers is in it, and that's the episode where Adama has to meet Brett Summers, and we find out Brett Summers is actually Adama's ex-girlfriend.
Yes.
Cyrus Bellaby, right?
Yeah, and the reboot, they pretty much roll out Adama's mysterious family past, but here they give you those cold opens. Anytime they focus on him, they're like, shit's going down. He's got to fix it.
But what's funny about watching that episode is seeing like it's Apollo and
and Starbuck, and they're going, okay, go ring the bell. He's like, I don't want to ring the bell. You know, he's turning into a nervous teenager with his two buddies. And like, you know, here he is, current, you know, Commander Adama, you know, strong. And he's just like weak-kneed about this woman, you know, who's like, you know, was his ex. And she just plays it for, you know, she plays it to the hilt.
She really does.
So, you know, her. And it's a funny episode, you know, his way of dealing with things, you know, because they said he was really funny in real life.
Yeah, I have heard that. And that's great, because there's nothing worse when you have actors in roles they don't want to do, or the typecast, you know, ruins their life.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Battlestar Galactica, television's most spectacular space saga, returns.
Launch all Vipers.
Journey to the stars aboard the Battlestar Galactica. Don't miss One Perilous Adventure, starring Richard Hatch, Kirk Benedict, and Lorne Greene as Commander Adama.
Premiere Saturday, October 18th at 7 on Channel 17.
Oh, well, JJ was saying off air, and Tom was also saying off air, you knew people who use the theme to Battlestar as their, like, college graduation theme.
I remember, like, do you guys ever hear the story of the kid who killed himself when Battlestar Galactica got canceled?
No. I hate to think of such a notion. I thought it was just Star Wars fans who overreacted. Jesus.
No. He was... Jesus, I'm trying to
We're
remember
not here to shit on Star Wars, by the way. It's just an acknowledgement of some imperfections with fanboys, but...
Oh, I get pissed when I hear those fanboys.
Just a disclaimer, because I don't want people thinking I'm anti-anything, even if I don't like it.
But the thing was that... this kid was like 18 years old, and I think he had some mental problems. And he's 15 years old, right? And he was 15, and he was obsessed with the show. Like, he knew everything about it. And when it got canceled, he killed himself. And that really was kind of like, oh, Jesus, you know. Oh, mm-hmm. God. But and the thing was that it was on ABC. ABC right. was having a killer, you know, had a killer network.
And they canceled it anyway because of all the melodrama behind the scenes, even though the ratings were solid.
It was 30 out of...
The ratings were good.
Yeah, the ratings were good. But remember, it had to compete against All in the Family and Alice. So what happened was CBS moved those two shows up to the 8 p.m. time slot. So All in the Family averaged more than 40% of the 8 o'clock audience against Galactica's 28%.
Oh, jeez.
And then the reason it was canceled, the decision to bump Battlestar Galactica was not surprising. The series had been broadcast irregularly in recent weeks, attracting slightly over a quarter of the audience in its Sunday night time slot. Larson said that it was a failed attempt by ABC to reposition its number one program, Mork and Mindy, into a more lucrative time slot. So basically, it was up with Mork and Mindy.
That's wild.
I mean, you know, come on, you know.
I mean, society doesn't understand it.
But out of the 114 shows airing that season, it ranked 34th.
I don't even get how Mork and Mindy started out first on Happy Days. That never made sense to me. It's like you're adding sci-fi elements. That doesn't
as the great Gary Marshall would say, well, Star Wars was big, so my son said, let's put an alien on the show. I said, okay. What? So, you know, we decided to put one on, and this, you know, we tried everybody out. This one guy came in, Robin Williams, and what he did was he sat on his head. That I said, that's on Mork, you know.
Now, going back to something JJ said earlier, there was one episode that once I saw it again, I absolutely fell in love with it. And it harkens back to some of the disaster movies like the Poseidon Adventure and Tower of Inferno.
That's why I could find when I read the trivia.
Fire and Space is one of the best ones.
Yeah, yes. That's the more action-packed one. But I just guffaw in general how for season two, they had to use Universal was on a budget, so they used all kinds of stock footage from Earthquake and all the other who's the producer who did all those movies?
Irwin Allen.
Yeah, they did Allen, a lot of Irwin Allen ones, and I just like, of course they did.
Yeah, but the thing about Fire and Space is that really drove it for me was that it was not really an Apollo or Starbucks story. It was a lot of it revolved around Boomer. And I think you got to see the character right there and just the kind of person he was.
Totally. They always made an exclusive just like extra effort to again just remind you that it's a human drama show at the end of the day, regardless of who's, you know, killing who or destroying what. And kudos to the pyrotechnics, because like even the animation that they use, very minuscule. There's one near the end episode. You remember the episode where they're raiding that giant base? I'm not sure if that's the same episode.
Wait a minute.
Like one of the last ones they do. That's really awesome.
Not War of the Gods. It's
probably.
Experiment in Terra.
That might be it, because there are some creepy elements on that one too.
Are they dressed like in black?
Kinda, and like, they're infiltrating the base, and literally near the end, that's definitely its most Star Wars moment, where they're have talking over intercoms, and they're realizing they've been made, so they got to go in there and just blast everybody before they alert the whole base.
Also, one of the episodes, I can't remember which one it was, there was we talked about the Egyptian theme of it, and it was very heavily in that particular episode with Adama, and Baltar, I think, was there, and a couple of other characters, and just the way that felt, it had an element of what would become Indiana Jones to it as well, but kind of making history cool again,
Lost Planet of the Gods.
Okay, there we go.
That's the name of the one, Tom. Lost Planet of the Gods. And that's the one where they had to ask the women to be, because the warriors are suffering from an unknown disease.
Right.
Yes. And they asked Serena and I think it's Athena to become pilots.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think Starbuck and Apollo were the only ones who are there. And what happened was that they entered the planet Kobol, which is the legendary world from which humanity arrived. And that's the episode where Jane Seymour gets shot.
Yeah, yes. It's very harrowing for everybody. It's very unexpected until very near the end, where you're like, whoa.
Because her and Apollo get married in the episode, I think.
Yeah, that's
in right. The second part.
Total insult to injury is just like, dude, we were married. We weren't sure we wanted to do this. Now that our melodrama is over, we feel safe doing it, and we're still not safe.
But yeah, that was the one. My favorite is, well, I love the gun at Ice Planet Zero, but I like the one. What is it? Shoot, I love the Living Legend. I think that's one of the best ones.
Yeah, absolutely. That's far and away my favorite.
And the thing was that what people don't realize, Vince Edwards directed that. Yes. Ben Casey himself directed that.
There you go, Vince.
But man,
dude, but there's so many unusual career fields.
But a lot of people don't realize that's the episode that brought Sheba along with Lieutenant Bojay, who was and. He was the one that was on the Galactica before he was transferred to fifth fleet. You know, we wind up all about that, you know, and, you know, it was a good episode. And you know, Lloyd Bridges was just great in it. You know, he's playing like blood and guts Pershing or something like that. You know, he's like, you know, we got to get them where we get them. We can blast these guys out of the sky if we need to, you know?
Yeah.
Not to draw too geeky of a comparison.
A warmonger with a heart, as opposed to just a loudmouth general who you're like, please root for him.
It's not to be too geeky on it, but it is a lot like the friction between Professor X and Magneto.
Kind of.
Or to go even further into more political stuff, the difference between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. They had the same goal, but they went about it in radically different ways. And it, but the fact that they had two legendary actors doing it, is what truly made the episode. You could boil down everything else, but it comes down to Adama being forceful and trying to fight for peace, and you got Kane, who is gung-ho about we need to strike him hard and not really thinking about the consequences to what the Galactica was doing.
they really have to open up his mind at times, because he is a little shallow. He's not thinking it all through, and they're having to remind him, hey, no, we got to think this real carefully. This is our final clap back at, you know, the unstoppable Cylon force.
Well, the one that gets me is almost biblical is the one that's called what is it? The one with Patrick McNee where he plays the War of the Gods, which is a really good episode, and that brought Edward Mulhare into the thing. And I think the thing with that is, Iblis is the devil, you know.
Definitely heavily implied.
You know, and you know, he kind of, I remember Baltar like is captured, and he kind of looks and he kind of says,
"For those still, I know you're, Baltar is the Cylon creator."
So. Yeah, and Baltar
is the, in the original series, Baltar was one of the delegates to the Council of the Twelve. And that's he was the one who broke the Cylon peace.
Yeah.
And okay. Attempt to get his own little piece of the kingdom.
That's what it is. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
And what happens is that he kind of, you know, I've brought, like, I remember he says, you know, I've brought you this, I've brought you this, now let me take, and something tricks them where they find out he's like this, like, demon.
Yes.
And I'm like kind of sitting there going, you know, this is really interesting, you know. And and a lot of people think that when they find him in the crashed ship, mm-hmm. it's not the Pegasus. People think it's the Pegasus. It's not.
Really?
It's actually just a ship altogether. Yeah. But here's something interesting. The guy who plays one of the people, the Gemini's man, is Kirk Allen. Kirk Allen played played Superman in the 1940s.
Yeah.
So
classic serial guys instead of just TV guys only.
But that's the one where we meet John and the beings of light, and I think they are I think that's, you know, what a lot of people think is, you know, the you know, like you know, God or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember watching that, going like to myself, I wonder, you know, what, you know, it's kind of, you know, there's a lot of religious stuff in there. There's a lot of fun stuff in there, you know. And I think the thing that gets me the most is, you know, the whole series itself was just so phenomenal. And for one season to still be remembered.
Yeah, that means a lot.
Easy, yeah. You know.
And to its own deal, and then have critics act like, you know, not even give it a chance. It's like, it makes you wonder what. Usually, and when there's something that giant, a corporate thing, usually it means, you know, someone disagreed with the producers, so they wanted to secretly die or be infamous by, you know, getting critics to hate it. But I don't understand why you would not want that Star Wars money back then.
And here's the thing, we had. After the show, even well after the show was over, Richard Hatch, Dirk Benedict, there were a lot of people who were involved with the show who were either passionately still working on elements of the show. Richard Hatch had his own, had a reboot, as it were.
And I can't wait for you to hear the interview I'm doing with Athena Demos, one of the actresses in that abandoned project. And nice. To this day, they still... I mean, I've talked with Jay Wolfel, who was also part of the team, and even asked by the reimagined official guys to come and consult on occasion. And in the end, the only person who really truly won on that was having Richard Hatch come in and be a totally different character. Guy starting the coup on the new one. Here's the ultimate question I want you guys to just kind of fill in the blanks on. Nothing trivial or about what was or wasn't intended or anything. Just for introducing this to today's crowd, if you just were with someone who really does love all kinds of movies, is sci-fi, fantasy buffs, would you recommend they start with the new one and then come back to this, or start with this and then go to the new one?
Go to the original.
Okay.
Definitely go to the original.
To know, because, you know, sometimes... It's kind of, they've done this with Mission Impossible and Star Trek, where people watch a later one and then they come back to the OGs. So
then brace them for impact for one of the worst series ending episodes ever.
Just don't watch it.
Pretend it doesn't exist. Just know they got back to Earth.
Just read the comics. Better yet, I'll tell people to do this. Read the comics and then watch the show.
Yeah.
Comics are phenomenal.
The last episode of the original series, I thought was really good, where they, you know, they go up to this observation deck and they keep hearing this chatter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually the Apollo 11 landing.
Yes.
Everybody's going, okay, what's going to happen next season? Because it was technically the last episode. And I think Herbert Jefferson said, then we got a call a couple weeks later. We're not doing season two. And then when they did Galactica 80, I think they kind of rushed that a little bit because like, okay,
we're in agreement, JJ. They sucked.
It just purged everything out of existence for that show, for that series. Except they got Adama back. They brought Richard Lynch in, who you may remember. They brought nothing against Barry Van Dyke. I like Barry Van Dyke. He was good in a couple of Western, a couple of series.
Rough deal to just replace, the existing star who doesn't come back until like the last episodes. And it's just like, no.
And Kent McCord comes in and you're like, okay, this is not fucking Adam 12 in space. All right. And then they bring in Bob Douglas, who's like, the Earth girl who basically, doesn't know any better, but doesn't realize that they're, and it's like, oh, they bring in the space children. And it's like, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, end it now. Please just end it freaking now,
And they also had to bring in Robert Reed.
That was even weird.
I don't remember that.
Reed was kind of much like Vince Edwards coming in to direct. It was just one of those, man, they really wanted people who were kind of, again, just on the Universal lot to just come in and help out in some capacity.
Well, Troy, it's important that you don't tattle on people, because when you're a tattletale, it makes people hate you.
Shut up! Go back to your house with no toilet, Rob! Here's the story of a washed-up actor who has a really crappy perm hairdo. And a mustache that looks like a dead caterpillar. Now what are you gonna do?
Here's a story of a guy named McCord who was busy doing other things besides M12. They were two men first all together. The show was put on the shelf.
Dude, and it was called The New Robert 12, and it was in syndication. And well, we all know what happened to Robert Reed, so let's not make a joke out of that.
Oh, God.
No one else is going to know
what we're talking about. That's what I hate, too, is how half these people know some of these guys who are classic 60s to 80s stars, but they know them only because they've gone on all those clickbait Nikki Swift type sites. It's like, come on. They were known before their scandal.
Well,
who's the guy who shot his wife?
Gig Young.
No. From Beretta.
Robert Blake.
So there you go.
Robert
but
Blake.
So many people know him, but only for that. It's like he was known before he got there.
If only he'd listened to Sammy Davis Jr. in his theme song, he wouldn't gotten in trouble.
It came through the time.
Your time. Keep your eye on the sparrow.
You know what's weird? When you guys talk about Galactica, Battlestar Galactica, I went on the Battlestar Galactica ride at Universal.
How was it? Do they still have it? I know they still have the Waterworld at Universal last year.
There's the commercial for it, right? And the commercial had Lenny One Rib doing, who was the Time for Timer and Magic Mongo.
Yes.
He was doing the voice of the Imperious Leader, right?
Right.
So what happens is that, you're on the tram, Babs is there, doing it, but you're on the tram and guys, what's this? And you see a silence says, go through here, human, you will not be harmed. And all of a sudden you go in and it's dark, right? And it's a spaceship. And then there's all these like animatronic things that are like going, and all of a sudden like you just see like laser light. It's like, like a laser light show, right? And this guy runs in and he's dressed as a Viper pilot. And he's going, okay, you guys, get out of here as quick as you can. Go. The place is going to blow in 5 minutes.
Go.
Yeah. We got like the flake flame shooting up and all that shit. And for a 4-year-old kid watching that, I was like, oh, this is so cool. And like now I look back and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, I want to see the Jaws. I want to see the Jaws ride. Come on, but that's the thing that got me, like, that thing was so cool to look, to look at, and you'd have the Imperious Leader like sitting on the throne, on the light.
Give him the stink eye. Just like,
Stink Centurion.
Tell me, yes. Centurion. Tell me, Centurion, what are they doing here? We have captured the humans. They are, you know, part of a tour at Universal Studios, you know.
Nice.
Here's an over here, and you're still milking it. Thank you very much, you know.
They do need to bring that back then, if that's the case. So, altogether, though, I mean, how do you feel about them using all the stock footage of the show in Space Mutiny?
loved it.
I loved it. And I love what Mike, I think it was Mike Nelson when they did it on Rift Tracks. He goes, yes, we know that is the footage from Battlestar
Galactica. They got such shit for not knowing, because even though anyone who's known any of these guys should know by now that Mike isn't all that into, you know, sci-fi like the other guys are. Yeah. So,
I know Murphy hates Lucas, or he just, you know.
Oh, he and doing their riff tracks, the only ones they are pretty kind to are movies like Casablanca and Lord of the Rings, where they're just talking during it. They're not making fun of it.
But, you know, but when you watch Space Mutiny, it's like, okay, that's okay. So
those are the base stars.
Yeah. Those are the base stars. Those are the Cylon Raiders and those are the Vipers. And I don't think it, you know, and that's the Galactica, and they don't show any of the other ships. This is just the Southern
Sun. I love how Cam Mitchell looks almost exactly like Lorna Green's Adama.
Yeah.
Oh God, I just realized that.
And it's so easy to be distracted because the entire riff they're going, okay, Admiral Santa, what do you want now?
What about the little children and their toys?
Cam Mitchell taking the role so seriously for what's at the stage of his career where it was just, you know, not flaking, but just
give me a pick.
Yeah. And he got all his kids to be extras on this.
I'd be remiss to say if I forgot to mention, Battlestar Galactica inspired one of the funniest scenes ever on the A-Team.
Oh, yes. Yes.
He's a silent centurion walking by Dirk Benedict. He goes,
yes.
He looks like he's going to say, do I know you? It's like,
do I? Nah.
And that's not even including when they added the Man from U.N.C.L.E. tie-ins in that final season.
Oh, yes.
And Robert.
Like, if anyone's going to take down Robert Vaughn,
Robert Vaughn.
McCallum.
Kind of weird too, because like I think at that point David McCallum needed some money, and well, I don't think he needed the money. He wasn't like Chico Marx. Chico needed the money.
Yeah, and he wasn't. He definitely was not like his co-star Vaughn, where the dude would do anything for Roger Corman. He basically McCallum would do it just when he just wanted an extra, like, I don't know, lawn care for his house.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the things that blows my mind. I'm watching The Master. Right, where it was
Master Ninja.
And the episode where Master Ninja, where he plays the revolutionary leader. Now, before that, he had done The Invisible Man.
Yes, he had. Oh my God, that is such a good show.
And they made it the Gemini Man. So it's kind of like okay, so he was in a really good series. He did Sapphire and Steel. That's a great series to watch.
1000%. Our and friends of the show, Time Shifters, recently did a fun episode on that.
I gotta watch Sapphire and Steel. I've never watched it all the way through.
Yeah, you can find every single episode, I promise, on YouTube.
Okay, so I've got to watch that.
And also, in that same episode of The Master, I want to say, wasn't there like a... I don't think it was George
Wayne. They did it on MST somebody as
who was,
well.
Who was
they
like a...
re-edit it.
It was somebody who was like who played a spy or something like that, who was also a suave debonair type.
Lazenby, George Lazenby is in that episode with David McCallum. So I
didn't think it was him, but now that you mentioned, yeah.
He's like John Peter McAllister, the only white man ever to be in Japan and trained as a full ninja. You know, Asako's the and I'm like thinking to myself, they're all just like, you're the worst James Bond ever. You know, they're just like, they're ripping him a new one, and I'm like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, Lazenby, here's the truth. Lazenby went to the Philippines and Europe and made all these really like good grindhouse movies, but like,
yeah, Man from Hong Kong, yep,
yeah. Oh, don't get me started on that. this guy has a yellow streak up and down. But that's the thing. I mean, like, the thing was that, you know, Galactica is always going to be this show that has a mark. Even though it's one season, it's going to have a mark, you know.
And it left enough of a dent in a good way for people going to the conventions. And I mean, that's why Richard Hatch did the fan film, which you see the trailer for, and you're like, who do we have to kill at Universal to get them to release that on DVD? You know, it's just like,
and the thing was, he got almost everybody back.
He did, you know, and the effects were terrific. They served the story. They got your attention. It would have worked for a 90s type crowd instead of making you wonder what's going on. I don't get it.
I remember them talking about it because Herb Jefferson was in on with it. What's it called? Terry Carter was with it. The guy who played the doctor, Dr. Sela, was in it. He got John Colclus right before he passed away. You know, it was like, all right, I can get everybody. I don't think he got Lorette Spring, and I don't think he got who was it? I don't think he got Ann Lockhart back, because I think Ann Lockhart was retiring by then or something like that.
Yeah,
but you know, he got this whole new bunch of people that were like really gung-ho about it, and it looked really good, and then, you know, it just fell by the wayside, you know. And when he passed away, I remember thinking to myself, he should have had that thing fucking released. You know, it would have been great.
Oh, because now, like the Star Trek fan films, where they crossed over and got some Battlestar and Buck Rogers guys in. It's the same thing. It's just where they followed it, the instructions to a T, and they still got canceled. It's just like, if you're going to not let us release any version of this, then why even let us do it to begin with?
You know, and I think the thing that gets me the most is like the storytelling was so good, you know. Yeah. Granted, towards the end, I mean, they were using, you know, shots over and over again, but you know, if you watch this, the storytelling was just really good and the scripts were real good, you know. And I think Herb Jefferson was saying, like, you know, they would get scripts, like, you know, maybe they were shooting so much at one point, they would get scripts the day of, and you know, it would be the night before the writers would bring the scripts out and give it to everybody, you know, and say, okay, this is what, you know, this is how this scene's gonna go, this is how this scene's gonna go. But there's one thing I've always said, is like, the good thing about it is it was the morality play of it. It was also the human aspect of everything. The episode where Serena dies, they were trying, there's a scene where Apollo has to tell Boxy that his mother's dead, right?
Yep.
And
not Richard easy to break that news.
He has to break, and he's like, how do I tell a child his mother has died? You know, and it was just that, you know, I think she was going to do something else. She was going to do a movie or something like that. And she said, look, I just want out of the script, you know, because, you know, after this, you know, I don't know what you're going to do with me. And Larson was like, all right, we're going to write you out. We're going to have you get shot. And, you know, this is what happens. And she's like, okay, fine. Cause you know, she didn't know how long she was going to be there for, you know, and you know, that scene where he tells Box that your mother is going to be not here anymore, but we're still going to have memories of her. And, you know, he's telling this little kid, you know, and Noah Hathaway was like, I started crying. I thought she had really died.
Yeah.
You know, but good, you know, actor, it was,
we'll do that.
But you know, it was just really, really good to see that, you know. And you know, and the way Adama was as a lead character, there's something I said about Edward James Olmos' character when he did Adama.
Yeah,
he didn't radiate a warmth. There was no warmth with him. There was no warmth, character-wise.
And in all fairness, different aspect. You know, they're different going aspects. Harshness of life, while this one is still trying to do a little bit of hope, a little bit of everything. Is like,
hey. Lorne Greene is like the father trying to hold the family together, and that's the great thing about him. And he, you know, he'd done Ben Cartwright for God knows how many years, and that's the thing that got me, was like, you know, he was still Ben Cartwright, he was still fresh in the memory of things.
Cartwright, and oh, not that one, sorry.
No, no. And And the thing was that, you know, he's, you know, he plays a father who's in mourning, because you got to remember in the first episode, he loses his son, Rich Springfield.
Yeah.
You know, who basically was, you know, 2 or 3 years away from, you know, hitting it big.
Yeah, with
class book. Yeah, just his girl.
Honestly, everyone can kind of enjoy either version of Battlestar. You know, it's like, again, neither of them have a good follow-up. Fans pretty much both hate Caprica, and I know there's some, as well as Galactica 1980, because again, they have good ideas, but they just strain way too far from the farm. And
the
original here is good, as you guys have already summed up, at just allowing you to kind of dissect, hey, you know, it's an adventure every week. They're always on the run, fighting back. That's kind of fun. And this one, you know, the redo was more of a fun, gritty, just plot twist galore. And it helped that they had, again, Ronald D. Moore and company, just, you know, from the Star Trek saga, trying to make it their own bread and butter without offending anybody.
Yeah, that, you know? And right there is the fundamental difference for me between the original and the reboot. The original was a lot like an Exodus story, which, because it was basically based on one or two.
Yeah.
So you had the opportunity to do some sandboxing and play over here for a little bit, and then come back and have an episode where the Cylons are attacking, and then come over here and you have the morality play here and this and that. Mm-hmm. Whereas the reboot, it's very much a self-contained. You're not running necessarily. You don't have the ships following you
every day. We
don't
know.
It's very much more of a war drama than it is an Exodus story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the thing that I didn't like about the Galactica reboot was, like, you know, they made Baltar this sniveling little shit. You know,
fair enough. I mean,
where in the original, he's a sniveling little shit, but he wants to get his revenge on Adama, because that was his thing. He wanted to get Adama for anything and everything. And then, you know, he creates the female Cylon, which was like, kind of like, you know, I was like, why a female Cylon? You have the Cylons now that are really, you know, you're going to be doing this again.
It's kind of like Westworld, where they wanted just some kind of just something that would blind him by the enemy, that would convince them to make him turn to the dark side. But those visions can sometimes be like Smeagol, you know, Gollum in Lord of the Rings, where they go on a little too long, where you're just like, okay, I get it. He's a piece of shit.
What happened at the end of the new series? I always heard it was like,
they return to a new Earth, but they do it way better than Galactica 1980, where, oh, by the way, we got colonies and we're cops now.
Yeah, and there was like a stupid plot twist at the end, not just they land on a new Earth. I want to say everybody was a Cylon.
Not everyone.
I could be completely off on that.
I think it works way better than it did now, because everyone kind of wanted more hardy har, you know, a final battle, and they weren't trying to do that. They weren't trying to be cliche.
It was a matter of being cliche. It was a matter that they just kind of hit in the same problem that Lost did. They reached a point where they didn't have anything, so they had to get something out of their ass.
Oh my God. I know so many who will die for Lost, and I'm like, I never understood it. I didn't get it. And truth be told, I don't think the writers did either. They keep coming up with random ass reasons to where you're just like, no, that also doesn't work.
Well, you got this big beast out there. It's a bear, and it's on a desert island.
There's all these other people who were here all along. No,
and
no.
there's a hull of an airplane that leads down into a. You have to take a ladder down into it to find a radio that only plays.
Unfortunately, I didn't go there. My God, if they did radios, then I would have been like. So I have the whole series, and I've been rewatching it on Blu-ray. I dig the ending of the new one. I dig the first season of the original BSG, just because they both did what, kind of like Babylon 5, they both did what they wanted to do and rise above just the sci-fi format and, you know, do a mixture of space cops, Western tropes, and war commentary and allusions, but still make it fun. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, B5 also gets complaints by fans who don't care for season 5, and I I'll defend that one just because, again, he outlined it that way. He wanted it that way. And I get it. Some fans just don't find it as much fun, but I really do feel like if you don't like the final season, at least see the final episode where it shows them becoming older. And I would have liked to definitely have seen that had the original BSG been on longer, just show them retiring and getting together for a final dinner or some shit before they all die.
Show them coming to Earth and how
living.
And show them how we were, you know, they would help us get to this, you know, the Cylons would, you know, because they got Baltar in the end, if you remember that. They got Baltar.
Mm-hmm.
What if Baltar, you know, says, well, remember, he's in the one episode, he tells Apollo and Starbuck how to destroy the mother of all base stars. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what do you want from this? He says, oh, I just want my peace and my quiet and a pardon, and that's all. And like Adama looks at him like, you son of a bitch, you know, fuck you. I'm gonna,
he wanted to say it, but he couldn't. Not on network TV.
You son of a bitch.
Both shows make heavy use of crack. Did you ever incorporate that into your secret curse words that you say and people think you're saying something else until they realize he's not saying it?
Yeah, absolutely. What is that
word?
Yep. It's that crack. Builder carb.
Yes. Metalhead, it's the Feldekarp. What the heck? You know, I just say, I used to say frack in high school. Ah, frack, you know. People would be like, what are you talking
damn
about?
Damn homework assignment, frack this.
Frack that. Frack it, you know.
Man, in the new series, they just drove it into the ground. Every other word. Well, this frackety, frackety, frack, 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 frackety, frack, 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 frack.
I liked it better when it became more like X-Files, where they did kind of have a bigger conspiracy. But I just prefer it compared to so many of the other Canadian shows, which are infamous for numerous reasons. Like, I'm talking like Earth Final Conflict and
oh yeah
shit, where you're just like, okay, it's Canada, but it doesn't have to suck. I have nothing against Kevin Sorbo, as despite him being a piece of shit, he is a decent actor.
Mm-hmm. We're making a science fiction here, eh?
Right, not Hercules anymore.
You have to put on your space tooth, eh?
Yeah, you gotta go down for, you want some back bacon from the other planet? You know?
Oh yeah, we get some 2-4 beer too. We gotta get.
Oh, I love how you guys all just became the inhabitants of Fargo all of a sudden. Oh yeah.
Well, don't you know we're going out into space? You might want to wear a little something and maybe bring a hot dish to pass in case you had an alien encounter. You don't want to be unfriendly.
Yeah, that's right. Now we're becoming golems.
You don't want the Cylons sitting at the table making them feel unwanted, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
He wanted to kill his
wife. Get that card table and the folding chairs, eh?
We got the Imperius leader sitting somewhere. Now, what's he going to bring? Oh, he's bringing the 3-bean casserole. That's great. Okay.
Oh, that's just the best stuff, don't you know?
Yeah. And they got the fish fry and everything, you know.
That's right.
But
maybe we can take him out and maybe watch him, have him come over to watch the Vikings play the Packers, eh?
Oh, yeah. Or
Packers ran the Super Bowl.
Chip down at the school, you know?
Oh, you know, my youngest Brett,
he's in the curling team. He may go on the Olympic team. We don't know yet, but he's going to be doing the curling soon. So I guess we're going to be doing that. Okay. All right. See you later. March. Get the snowblower ready. We're supposed to get about 12 inches tomorrow. 16. Okay. Get it ready. Okay. Just get it prepped up, honey. Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, and don't worry about the Tupperware. You can just wash it and bring it right back. We're all good with it. We got plenty.
I got so much coming out the ears. You know, back in the 70s, my mother, she bought so much Tupperware. Tupperware would come to the house, and she'd look, and she'd be like, I got it. Go away.
if they were running out of stock.
Yeah, they were, you know,
yeah, there was the stock.
There was a time there, I remember, you know, my mother, my mother and my father, every Saturday, they'd have the family over, you know, and we'd have, you know, the turkey or the, you know, the whatever my mother made. And, you know, she'd be like, take some home, take some home. And one time we went to my Aunt Gertrude's house and she made this giant turkey and lasagna. I mean, she didn't make turkey and lasagna. She made turkey and lasagna. I mean, if turkey was in lasagna, you wouldn't be able to eat it. But she made this turkey and lasagna. And then my Uncle Swen, he brought home a, you know, a couple of herring he caught up there in Lake Macapi, you know, up there. And, you know, it was, you know, it wasn't that bad, you know. And, you know, and then my brother Sven, he made potatoes that were so good. So, you know, at the end of the night, my aunt goes, you know, hey, can you want to take some home? My father says, go blow yourself, you know. I don't want to be bothered with it. First time.
Yeah. And there was a time that Rod and Bob went out in the wilderness and they got a couple of deer and they brought it home and they gave us all venison and they gave us some sausage and they said, we're not going to be able to eat all this. You take some.
Rob, now they were the two. Now that's Cynthia's brothers, right?
That's right.
Okay. So they're Rod's married to Linda. And Bob's married to Susan, right? Yeah, okay.
No, he's married to Elaine.
No. They were married to Marcia. Marcia.
Okay. All right, okay. So, yeah, I remember them bringing that venison over. Yeah, oh, God, I couldn't believe how much they
got. It was so good, and they cooked so nice. And
the teriyaki.
It was amazing that even Susan had a new coat.
Yeah. Yeah, and you they guys did the teriyaki marinade, and that was from Japan, you know.
Oh, yeah. That was a little bit too spicy for me, though. That was a little bit too spicy. I couldn't even get it to go down with the ranch.
Oh, God, shit. No. Bob up the street from me, Bob Lickenthorpe, remember him?
Oh, yes.
The guy with the one eye and the droopy nostril.
And droopy.
Yeah, and he got one time he brought venison home. Well, his wife Martha, God bless her, you know, she has the lazy foot.
Oh,
you know.
Lordy, oh dear.
Oh yeah, the lazy foot. You should see her when she's running. It's like watching, you know, it's like watching somebody dragging, you know, dragging a 5-pound bag of sand behind him. So
oh my God, what fresh one we open.
And don't forget the time we had the really big snowstorm in the middle of July.
Oh yeah, remember that? Yeah, that was a total washout for 4th of July. You know.
Yeah, but it was. But what do you expect? It was still early spring.
Yeah, you know, that's the great thing about Minnesota. You wait 5 minutes and the weather changes. You know.
Yeah,
Minnesota should change its nickname to where it goes from 0 to 60 in a few hours.
Yeah, you know, you remember that winter of 78, you know, I had to go to Evelyn's house to pick up some banana bread she made. And
yeah,
that's good banana bread. Oh, God, I think we've gone off trail on this.
It's okay. This is the blooper section. Sorry, right. Don't you know? Battlestar ends on a high note, but not with any hillbillies. This has been a delight having you all on here.
We gotta
tease JJ's inevitable podcast because we're promising it's happening.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta get the microphone.
I'll give you $400 right now for a Graham studio.
No, I'm actually gonna use. It's a plug-in microphone. You can use
even better
into a laptop, and then I'm going to do that, and then I got to figure out how to like edit everything and all that jazz. So it's going to be fun, you know.
And the first few episodes will be breaking the fourth wall. We didn't suck too bad, did we?
Oh God!
We did not suck at all.
No, we didn't. We didn't. You know,
that's us doing robot noises, not the connection breaking up.
Oh God! Oh man! Oh,
I'm so glad having you all on here. Hopefully, we picked enough brains and got them interested in checking out the show. Once again, it's on Tubi, which is free. You have no reason to not see that on that or the discounted Blu-rays, a Viter show. Do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
Hell, if there's even a shadow puppet version of Battlestar Galactica, go see it.
Oh, but you guys remember the toys? The toys?
Oh, of Battle- yes.
I have seen the toys. They are okay. Interesting.
They had, okay, I remember them having the Galactica launch bay, right?
Yes.
It was the Galactica plastic, and you had to launch the Vipers off. Then they had the ones where you could shoot the missiles out from
Yep.
Well, supposedly from what I read, and this actually happened, some kid choked to death on those things.
So we have a suicide. Now we have an unintentional suicide. Now we have, and we have critics blasting it at every point. So this show could not catch a break.
And no. That asshole is the reason I couldn't get a Boba Fett with a shooting missile.
Yeah. that little fuck had to die because... Because oh, brother was going,
hey, you be the silent, I'll be the Colonial Viper. Okay, Tommy.
Didn't they have a disclaimer at that time for smoking warnings?
No, because we didn't think back then. People didn't think that kids were going to be that stupid.
They pulled the toy off the market and put it back out again, but they actually did the whole, you know, glue the thing in so it doesn't come out. And then, if you remember, they had the action figures. And they only had a and Apollo, and then they had the big ones, which was the Cylon, which is really rare to get. And then they have the one that looks like
He looked like Ed Straker from UFO.
Yes, he looked like I would say he looked like Race Bannon.
Kind of does too, but
he looked like Ed Straker, and I was like, "This is not a Colonial Warrior. This is not a Colonial Warrior."
You know, he looked like a hippie.
So like in a few words,
and love
what is a colonial warrior?
You know, and he had like this thing that looked like a vibrator in his hand for a gun. And I'm like, what the f- is this? You know, the Cylon had the actual gun and everything. This guy had like, you know, he had like, he didn't look like a colonial warrior. He had like a vest, a white turtleneck, and black pants and black boots. And I was like, this is the worst friggin' toy ever. My buddy Eric had it, and we were trying to play with it, and he's like, don't play with it. Why? It's just a piece of crap.
It's a piece of shit. Yeah. It'll break, and no one will want that toy replaced at all.
Yep, and I had the Cylon version of that, and that was a piece of crap, and it fell apart, and things broke. And so if you had one of those in good condition, consider yourself lucky.
Mm-hmm. Remember, folks, it's Mattel, so Mattel can say, hey, we told you so.
And with that, ladies and gents, is our Hell of a Time show.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a